Well, hello there. Welcome back. And Happy New Year. On this episode, Rich Rogers and I, we dust off the mic, talk about what we've been up to since the holidays, what we got planned for the new year. This is Diceology Episode 21, Season 2.
This is Diceology, the podcast about tabletop games, and we talk to the people that play them.
Diceology is sponsored by listeners like you. Join my Patreon over at patreon.com/MattJExperience and get access to extended interviews, bonus shows, my game prep notes, some polls on what games we play, and more. Let's make this our regular thing. Mad love to brand new patrons, Gary M., War the Ogre, Chris Kamenecki, James Mendez Hodes, David Missler Kubinek. I appreciate the love and support. Thanks. Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Welcome to Diceology Season 2.
It's Diceology 2020.
You know, I like that. I like kind of like it's Cyberpunk yours. 2020.
It's yours.
I like it.
Well, I mean, after the Pondsmith, you should work on that branding.
That's right. Diceology 2020. I like it. How was your holidays?
Holidays were good. We stayed here in Minneapolis. We just moved the middle of last year, and we stayed here in all the snow. So it was the first white Christmas that my son got to experience. It was good. How about yours?
It was all right. I did pretty much the same. It was me and the dog. We just stayed here in Kansas City, and it was all right. And Santa brought me some sweet Tupaca socks.
I saw a picture of those. They're great.
So, yeah, I like that. That was awesome. That was pretty cool. So, Santa bring you anything exciting for Christmas?
I got a cool pair of wireless earbuds that are amazing. And because I ride the bus to and from work every morning and afternoon, it's really great to have something, because I had, you know, the old iPhone plug-in thing. And when you've got big winter jacket and all the other bric-a-brac, it's really nice to have a pair of earbuds. They're pretty swanky. I love them.
Nice. No, I'm with you. I'm going through a struggle with earbuds. I use mine mostly for the phone, mm-hmm. running around the office and stuff. But I also like having the same pair for when I'm traveling, going to the gym, whatever, so I can listen to music or audiobooks. And I'm having a rough time finding a pair that I like that fits the bill. So I'm probably like on my, I don't even know. Yeah, I haven't found a pair that I really, really liked yet. So that's rough.
It was funny when I first tried them on, I didn't realize there was like extra bits to put on to the thing to where it was like a little bridge that would go into part of your ear.
Okay.
Not in the ear part, but like, you know, the outer part of your ear to help hold it on. So they kept like popping out, like one dropped out and went right into a little bank of snow. I'm like, oh, man. But I got it out. It was IP6 or IPv6, whatever they call it, you know, water resistant.
All right,
and,
nice.
And then I put the little bridge thingy where it would like prop in my ear. And after getting the right size where it would make my ear raw, I was like, yeah, it's stuck in there. This is perfect.
Nice. No, that's very cool. That's pretty cool. Oh, you also have some, you've also got some Hit the Streets Defend the Block news.
I do. Hit the Streets Defend the Block PDF came out at the very tail, like literally Christmas Eve. We submitted it and got it into DriveThruRPG. So it is a 2019 release. The book file is going to be handed over to me this weekend, probably on MLK. And when Bookmobile, which is the book printer here in Minneapolis that we've chosen, when they get the file, they're going to print it. So all the books will be going out over the next 4 or 6 weeks, as long as the proofs are good. So it's like done-ish. And we're up for an award, which I'm really excited about.
Nice. What award is that?
So there's this Banff-sees. There's this, the Banff podcast, B-A-M-F. I don't think that's an acronym, but if it is, it's pretty funny. I think it is BAMF as in related to Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler, yeah. No, I'm
with you. It's a supers and comics book or comic book related podcast that's been out for a number of years. Right. They've had some really cool people. They had just in the last 4 months, they had Abner from Abner Landing, the writer, and they've also had on a bunch of Supers RPG folks like Steve Kenson and the like. So I was really excited because I'd run the game for a few of the hosts from the podcast, and they were really excited by it and championed it. And then now here I am on the poll, which the poll is, it's got a lot of entries, but currently, as of this recording, in the lead, the voting is open for the rest of January. So, you know, one update on the Tiny Supers Kickstarter for all those hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of backers, and we'll get swamped. But it's kind of nice, like a little bit of a tailwind. It's just, no, wait, is that tailwind? Anyway, I'm drifting. I don't know, some kind of racing analogy to where I'm not losing. It's kind of awesome.
No, I saw the update for that, and I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
But I forget when I'm looking at podcasts, I've got like tunnel vision. I'm looking at all the RPG game stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget that there's probably a ton of comic book stuff out there too.
I love that they bridged the kind of the gap, right? There's supers. When they talk about RPGs, it's primarily super stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had the guy on from Villains and Vigilantes version 3 or you know, 3rd edition,
right?
And but then they also bridge to comic book, like they had these guys on from this like indie, maybe it's a Kickstarter backed comic book about something called WrestleTopia. So it's like Journey to the Planet of WrestleTopia. the comic's like it's a limited issue run with the idea that there's this planet,
right,
off in the cosmos that has received our television airwaves of broadcast wrestling entertainment. And it turns out there's an entire planet is already based off of wrestling.
Right.
And one of the jobbers from the wrestling network had said, you know, I'm the champion of the galaxy due to some kind of whatever, you know, chicanery with kayfabe and blah, blah. And this WrestleTopia sent their greatest wrestlers to defeat this guy. Like, isn't that insane? What a concept.
That is
insane.
That is awesome. I like it.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh yeah, the BAMF podcast is really fun to listen to.
That is awesome. What's next for you game design wise after Hit the Streets, Defend the Block?
Man, and my White Whale is probably next. Hit the Streets, Defend the Block kind of snuck up on me. It was a game that I designed because there really wasn't anything that sat in that space that I wanted to run. Mm-hmm. But as you have probably seen, I have this baseball RPG. I think I maybe even mentioned it to you, I don't know, a bajillion times. The Bat Hack. And
yes,
I'm feeling really good about the space that it's in. Keith Stetson came in and did some dev editing, gave me a bunch of notes that I need to wrestle back into shape now that I've got Hit the Streets off of my plate, so to speak. Right. And I'm stoked about it. Bat Hack is a weird game, but man, it's super for people who like it.
Right.
People really dig it. Like I have people who hit me up, and Jesse Abelman's been a huge proponent for it, and Lowell Francis, head of the community side of the Gauntlet, he played in a number of the sessions that I ran for Sunday group, and he's a real big fan as well, and Tyler Lominack. It's just nice to have a few people who come from I really know baseball and this is a cool RPG, and people who come from I really know RPGs and this is a fun sports RPG. So
right.
It's really been encouraging, and it's a thing that I want to get out there. I released a beta last year, and I feel like I have enough to kind of push it over the finish line. Just have a nice few more touches, and then just making it make sense. I think I'm at the point that Mark Diaz Truman and I were talking about Cartel, and Cartel from a game is done. Like you could play it, you could take that quick start, and it's the game. Sure, there's a bunch of GM advice, but the GM advice exists in pieces and places in other Magpie games and that kind of stuff. It's not once you see the moves, which are the real evolutionary part. It's the game. You just run the game, but
you just run it right.
He's gotta make Cartel of the World make sense to people who haven't kind of lived and breathed it for him, right? That's the hill that he's gotta climb. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, Mark Diaz Truman, you amazing game designer guy, you. But but like that's different crux. But like that's where I feel like I am. How do I make Bat Hack make sense to person off street who says, I played a baseball game, or I have watched Major League and it made me laugh. And like, I don't know how to do that at all.
I'll tell you what, I grew up with The Rock in wrestling in the '80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was it. That was fun. That was exciting. And that's as much of wrestling that I got into.
Mm-hmm.
Then Nathan Pauletta.
Worldwide Wrestling.
Yeah, RPG. Worldwide Wrestling, yes. He ran that at Origins 1 year and had a big old table forming up. And I got invited. I was just walking through and to come on and play. And I'm like, I'm not a big wrestling fan, right? I don't know that I'm.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, it's not about wrestling. Sit down. I'm like, what do you mean it's not about wrestling? It says Worldwide Wrestling right there on the. So I sat down. My friend Jeremiah was there. He sat down. He played too. And I think we played like teams. So in wrestling, you pair up,
mm-hmm. right?
And you're fighting other teams together. That game was amazing. There's probably 8 people at the table, maybe more. I don't know.
Wow.
It didn't bog down. I was in. I never tapped out, right, or disengaged at any point. I was in everybody's scene, engaged in everybody's scene, in the ring, outside the ring, mm-hmm. at the meta level, right? I was sucked in. And I think his pitch for the world was quick, right? And I was in. And now we're designing our wrestlers. We're trying to figure out what our theme things are. And I was locked in at that, right? Mark, when he first ran Cartel, I had an image in my head. But when he talks about Durango and mm-hmm. the politics there and how they get to the state that we see them in today, right? I was sucked in. He was blending some of that with some Spanish, right? Some learning Spanish at the same mm-hmm. time that I'm learning some of the history thing. And again, it was engaging. I loved it. So I'm excited for you because I want to see. I know how much Bat Hack means to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know how baseball is big for you. So I'm excited to see, right, how you bridge that, how you do that. Are you going to run it at Origins? Are you going to Origins?
Yeah, I'm going to Origins. I'm definitely going to run it at Origins. I may not offer Hut Cartel so that I actually have an opportunity to run it.
No! Actually, that might be all right because I might run Hut Cartel.
Yeah, awesome. Baby. That that's awesome. What I'm talking about.
I ran it back home for RPG Day and folks are loving it, man. It was good.
Awesome. That is fantastic. It's a great game. It's a great game.
You caught up on The Mandalorian? You good? Are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm done with Mandalorian. We're up to episode 8 with wife and kid and me watching it, but it's like my third time through. I downloaded all the episodes to my phone, and when I'm on the bus sometimes I'll like jump to see Cara Dune beat the hell out of somebody. It's awesome.
So for me, what's Fat, my kid and I have been watching it. And so we might have spoilers in here. So if you haven't watched it, yeah, you might want to bail. My kid and I have watched it, and I know he has rewatched pieces of it with his mom, and I've rewatched some of it on my own. I haven't done that with a whole lot of TV shows.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Once I go through a season, I'm like, I'm good. Unless there's something I thought I missed and I had to go back in and catch it again. I've like 2.5 times I've gone through The Mandalorian.
Nice.
And yeah, it's good stuff. It's I'm mad that I gotta wait till next year, right?
For season
2, but
I mean, if you got Disney Plus, bro, jump in, do some Star Wars Rebels, some Clone Wars. You want to find out about the Darksaber? There's a whole lot of Darksaber stuff. That crazy thing that Esposito whips out at the end. There's a ton of that. ton.
That was awesome. Because the ship is down. I'm looking. I'm like, wait a minute. Why are we having it? Why is this a scene? Right? Why is this even a scene? Right? All right. So you want to show us that the bad guy gets a, whoa. What is
it? Yeah.
I know what that is. Yeah. I know what that is. Right?
That was one of those like.
I think go ahead.
I went through some weird moments with Mandalore. Where first watching, I was watching it, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on with this. And then by the end of the first episode, I'm like, this is going to be Lone Wolf and Cub, and I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I don't know, man. Like, is he going to put some guns on the baby carriage?
And that's like, right. That's what I thought. I'm like, man, he's about to kick that carriage out.
I'm like, oh man, I don't know if I love this. And it goes on. I'm like, okay, we're getting there, And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, they're just doing Seven Samurai. Oh,
Seven man. Samurai.
Like, okay, so now we're just gonna do, oh, now they're doing a horror movie. But like, I dig it. But like, I don't know. And by the, I think, right after that particular episode, like 7 and 8, right, everything right. locked in, everything came locked together. Yes. And yes. They did that thing that I loved in the early seasons of Farscape.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. We're going to the same place. I yes. love when that happens.
Yes boy. That is why I love talking to you. It's like when Farscape was like, oh, we're about to do a thing. Let's trail back through all of these, you thought, not at all connected episodes and pick up these folks to help us with this grand plan. And when Mandalorian's toured around like, I need somebody to watch this damn baby.
Right.
Quill, you're on board. Yeah, I'm not going to call you by your name until you're dead, but here you go.
Right.
Cara Dune. Yes, that's the stuff, man.
That is the stuff. When I saw that, I thought of Farscape that, like, I think it was season one, right? Because that was kind of the ending and the cliffhanger. They ran right back through the whole season, picked up people, and I'm like, oh, that is badass.
Yeah.
I love that shit.
Me too. You know, me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, and it's funny because it's a thing that we do in RPGs that no one's ever really necessarily mechanized. It's like, right. You get XP, that's your reward system. You get coin, that's your reward system. But like in the Farscape that we're talking about in Mandalorian,
right?
Instead of getting XP, maybe you get ally, right? And right. and deploy ally and thing. And I haven't seen a game that's really oriented around that. I've seen it as a tack on. I've seen it as things that GMs do,
right?
But I love that. Like I
love that.
I love that thing of like, yeah, I'm about to get my ass kicked, but guess what? I befriended this guy in the woods. Here he comes.
Here he comes. With his killer robot.
Yes, killer yes. robot. He ain't a killer no more. He's a nurse.
Nice.
But back isn't all that I'm working on. Jesse Ross, who is my layout artist on Hit the Streets, Defend the Block, is also a really good game designer. He's got a Kickstarter coming out for a trophy.
Yes. I've been watching the Twitter posts on Trophy, and then I've seen a lot of the Gauntlet.
Yeah. People are crazy for that. By the way, just so we're clear, I'm just giving a plug to Jesse. I have nothing to do with Trophy. Scary games make me scared.
I'm on the fence, man. I'm like, oh, I want to, but that looks scary.
Trophy Gold might be your jam, though. I think Trophy Gold might be worth peeking into because it's a little bit of story game, a little bit of OSR. It's a neat mix. But Jesse and I worked on a game last year. We play tested it a good bit. And of course, he's got mad layout skills. So he actually made playbooks and basic moves. So it looks like a legit game. It's called Working Stiffs. And I'm running that at Con of the North next month. So I'm like T minus less than a month away from running it again after not touching it since the summer. And I'm trying to gear back up into that one. That's a Dunder Mifflin by way of Shaun of the Dead.
Okay.
Office workers who deal with the undead in a weird zombie post-apocalypse that wasn't a full apocalypse. It's one of those apocalypses in breaking the world, but then people have gone on with their lives and now they kind of ignore that there's this entire undead population that's on the other side of a wall. you might know why I had to kind of move away from this for a little bit to get some distance, but like there's a wall that's been constructed to hold back the undead. And now the regular people just living their lives and ignoring that that took place.
That's right.
And you're the people who have to deal with it. So a little bit of Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit of Minute Work. Not the Aussie band.
Oh,
I love that band.
I do. I discovered them in high, actually grammar school. I was like 7th or 8th grade. I would get the LPs from the library, take them home.
Play. Nice.
So,
but yeah, working stiffs is really fun to run. It's a good work a day. Like you,
right.
You play characters that they really are. This is the worst job. It's literally the worst job. It's the worst job in society because you have to go fight like zombies and shit. Like,
right.
Wow, who wants that job?
Right.
So all the playbooks are oriented around that. They're the people who are like, you know, it's been really fun ruminating on getting back into working stiffs and watching Superstore. Because, man, Superstore, if you're not watching the show, oh my God, it's such a good show. All it's right. One of my favorite comedies. It's an NBC show about the employees at basically a Best Buy.
Okay.
And it deals with stuff from like one of the high achievers is an illegal alien. And that's a whole plot line that's going on. And he didn't know it. Like he didn't know. He didn't. He thought he was a citizen. And then he come to find out that he's not. And then you got stuff like they try to unionize at one point. So there's a whole lot of like real worldy stuff, but it is goofy as all get out. It's got America Ferrera in it as one of the main characters.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to forget his last name, but one of the members of Kids in the Hall is in it. And he is bizarrely funny. It's great. It's a great,
I will check it out.
Office comedy.
I didn't know about it.
I think they only, for a while, it was like one of those summer comedies.
Okay.
But it's done well enough that now in my fourth season or so, they've actually put it in rotation in the regular, you know, happen during sweeps and all that good stuff. But yeah, check it out. It's on Hulu. It's usually when my son and I watch it.
All right. I will check that out for sure.
But yeah.
We fell into a, I'm going to call it a superhero show.
Mm-hmm.
Code 8. Do you know this?
No. What is that?
So it's interesting. I like it. I might do something with it game-wise. So I don't remember the name of the actor. He plays Arrow in the DC Universe.
Oh, Arnell?
Yes. So he, the actor, and his brother, younger brother, are in this. I think they kickstarted this movie. What you have is a world where I think they say 2% or 3% of the population are powered,
mm-hmm.
right? And when the show opens, they're giving you kind of a brief history of power. Well, U.S. history with powered people in it, right? And they go through the industrial era, right? And so a lot of the industrial era is happening because you have powered people working. And they're happy. They're doing like you've got a guy who can control fire. He's welding, right?
nice.
Right. They're doing. Yeah, they're putting these folks to work. They're doing that stuff. And as they're doing the opening credits, you also see automation come online, right? And so automation, like it did real world workers, replaces these powered workers, right?
Mm.
And so when the show opens, you have this situation where you still have these powered people, but they're not allowed to use their powers. A lot of places have banned or made using your powers illegal, period, right? One of the guys is doing a job application. He's just going in to do some office work, right? And in there, they have like, are you a felon? Are you powered, right? Yes. I'm like, whoa, right? So that's the state of powered people in this universe so far, right? Early on, they show you how law enforcement deals with powered folks. They've got like Terminators, right? On drones, fucking drones fly around the city.
Oh,
right. They've got like Terminators up in the drone. They drop those fuckers out of the. Yeah, it is.
Oh,
crazy.
My gosh.
Yes. Yes. So it's a heist movie, right? With powered people living under these conditions. Right.
Mm.
So most of the show we're watching underworld powered folks try to pull off a heist. Wow. But again, like I said, there's a lot of lore happening right there all around. So I hope they do more stuff. I was excited. There's no one. I didn't see anybody flying. Most people have one power, one main power that they're plugged into.
Yeah.
And then I guess they have classification levels because they're looking for certain folks at certain strengths. For the most part, there's a guy who can read minds, but he's not bulletproof, right?
Right.
There are, like I said, there's a pyro. There's a person who can control electricity. All the normal stuff you see, but usually they have one main power, and that's it. We haven't seen anybody with multiple powers. There's no magnetos. We haven't seen anybody flying. But most of it is kind of controlled and oppressed due to law enforcement and the technology they brought online to deal with it. And I thought that was fascinating. So I'd like to see more of that Code 8 universe.
That's on my watch list on Amazon Prime Video now. I will check that out later. Looks cool. Looks really cool.
So, I think that's where I pulled it down from, too, was Amazon Prime. So
there's a short. I think they did a short film back in 2016. It's only 10 minutes long before mm-hmm. they did that. Looks like the some kind of fundraiser, like you said, and they made the movie. So that is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I got pulled in because, like I said, I recognize the actor that plays Arrow. And I'm like, all right. And his brother looks just like him, man. And then the scenes that they're in together, you can see that magic, man. I'm like, that's got to be there because they grew up together, right? You could, and I don't know either one of them, but you can see it on screen that they've got some chemistry together.
Nice.
So I like it. I was going to ask you what you're playing lately, but I know you're playing Spire.
I am playing Spire. It is a wonderful game.
What drew you to Spire? What do you like about it?
Spire is so I played Spire earlier in the year before we played, as you found out afterwards. And I was mostly interested in the aesthetic, in the flipping of some of the tropes where you're playing as drow who are oppressed by the elves, that there's a little bit of a guerrilla warfare going on and some whole spy cell activity things. And that all attracted me, but nothing really gelled per se in the sessions that I played until, well, I mean, it sounds until you ran it, Jay.
So I plan on doing a post on how Jay runs Spire. I remember, I think it was in the gauntlet you threw up there, an interest, to play some Spire.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought I volunteered to play too. I thought we had some volunteers, but no one picked up the mantle to run it. And I thought, well, I'll run it then, right? I think for me now, having gotten it to the table, and we've got two sessions and a zero session under our belt. Mm-hmm. I like how open it is on the GM side, right? You get a bunch of NPCs, motivations of those NPCs. You guys have your marching orders. You have a job to do, right? You got a thing you're trying to do. But there's no, when they go here, do this, read this text box. When they come over here, do this other thing. It's all reactive based on what you engage with, right? And that was fascinating to me. There's a lot of material to front load, I think. On both sides, for the players and for the but I'm fascinated with what we've got so far. My question is, and I think we've talked a little bit, is if I ran Kings of Silver again, what do I get? How close to what we end up with, right?
Right.
Do I get? And my money's on every single one is just going to be far and away different.
I think you're right. I think my experience with Spire so far is that it's a generally loose system. Loose as in easy to do things several different ways.
Right.
Not mechanically heavy. The book is long because of the different classes and explanation of advancements and that kind of stuff. Not long because of dense combat chapter.
Right.
But it kind of, to me, it comes to life with those particular modules for, I don't know what else to call it, but just like silver, because they have this really dense and super engrossing set of in-world artifacts that the players can study. And that makes the game sing. I think that if those things weren't part of the game, the appeal to me would be lessened. And I worry about that to a degree. Like once you go through the, I don't know how many they have, 3, 4, 5, like right. Then what do you do, Aspire? Then
what do you do?
Right. Then you work your ass off is what you do, because.
Right. I think as a GM, you got to recreate those things.
Exactly.
You handouts, right.
So I worry about Spire being this like magnificent gem that only has a certain amount of shelf life to a degree. Because I don't know if I want to play through Kings of Sylvar again. I might want to run it at some point, but I don't think, I mean, I've played through it the first time and it didn't grab me the second time. I think more is firing for me. The cogs are clinking together.
Right.
And there's definitely a certain panache that you have brought to it as well, of course, Shay. And the play group is pretty amazing. That doesn't hurt. Man, Misha is just...
I know it.
Top notch.
She's awesome. Yes.
She is. Jeremiah Good. Misha's idol is so good.
It's so good. Yes.
Yeah.
She will be my first guest on Diceology for season 2.
Good. So, that is a great guest to have. She is really thoughtful and interesting. I look forward to listening to that. I'm running Bite Marks for a home group. And. Brother, let me tell you that when I discovered in the book that there are only 5 advances and then you're done, that's it. That's it. That character's done.
It's done.
Done. I was like, damn, that is bold. And that wasn't the first time I thought that about Becky Anderson's game. Bite Marks is super good. It is such an interesting, because it's like, it's not about werewolves.
Okay.
It's about a werewolf pack.
Okay.
And it's got a lot of the teeth of Monster Hearts, but you can't just be a shitty teenager who runs away. You're like a very angsty werewolf who, this is your family. These are the only people who understand you. So even if you maybe hate them this week, they're nowhere else to go.
Right, there's nowhere else to go. Okay.
And I found that we're 4 sessions in, and this group is amazing. They're a local group, and I'm very blessed to play with them. They're bold, and they are playing some super interesting characters, and I just keep putting the pressure on them, and none of them, they're Midwesterners, so none of them chose to play the alpha. So I'm like, you don't understand what you've done to me. But as the son of a Marine Corps sergeant became a high school principal, I will step in and play an NPC alpha for you, friends.
That's right. I will do it.
Oh, my goodness. And I just pushed them. I pushed them so hard with this alpha. And there's this move in Bite Marks called Spill. Uh-huh. And it's like you have to be emotionally honest about the thing that is bothering you right now. And if you do it, then you end up getting like a pack point when there's a pack playbook. So there's a mechanical benefit to spilling. So you can actually provoke someone else to spill. You can like push them like, what's going on with you? And get up in their face, you know, and they freak out and they scream at you like, no, you make me angry about this thing. And it's so good. Like there's a whole half of a session where I'm just on the edge of my seat watching these people go. And, and after the last session, one of them said, hey, Rich, so, like, this is really emotional stuff, and I'm wondering, do you know of anything that could help us? Because like, sometimes I feel a little, like I carry, I'm like, it's called bleed, and I can help you. It's just so cool. Like, I love that we have those conversations, and I'm like, it's not theoretical, you know, it's not a thing. It's like, yeah, I feel that, too, like, there are times when I go home from a Bite Mark session and I'm also like, oh man, that was big stuff. So we talked about bleed and we're talking about different, I don't personally like the term aftercare. I know Nordic LARP uses it, but like, you know, post game stuff.
Right. Right.
It's to de-stress. Like, right. And so we got a few things we're going to try in the next session. I'm hoping that will help, but Yeah, I think Biteworks is a game that they are super into. Like, I record the game on my phone because I'm just terrible taking notes. Like, right. my chicken scratch is just illegible to me. But if I have it and I can listen to the game on the bus to and from or whatever, and I'll post it up on a Google Drive, and they go and they listen to it too. They're like, oh yeah, I listen to that thing. Nice. I'm just not used to players who are like engaged to the degree of like, yep, I listened to the game session on the way here. I am ready to go. I know everything to happen. We're all on the same page.
Just that's right. Don't need a recap. Nice.
No spin up time. No jumping around and like, okay, a last session, what happened? And polling the group and getting weird answers and having to roll with that as the new fiction. It's like, yep, we all know what's going on. It's, nice. It's amazing to have a home group and a really engaged group. I'm loving.
That's awesome. Now, these folks, are these new friends that you've made since you've moved, or did you know these folks out there?
So a mixed bag. One of them I played a play by post with, and he had introduced me to another girl who's in the group, but the girl stopped playing play by post. So I really hadn't seen her in like 6 years. Gotcha. And didn't realize that this was the girl I played play by post with when we were playing until after a bit. Like, huh, Kelsey. Yeah, I knew I played play by post with a Kelsey, and Adam introduced me to a Kelsey. Huh. Weird situation. Adam's sitting here at the table. Didn't click. Didn't click at all, Matt J. Didn't click until after. So I'm like, hey, Adam, is that the Kelsey that we played? Yes, Rich. Yes, that's the Kelsey.
I thought you knew that.
I don't have like a list of Kelseys that I play role-playing games with. This was that Kelsey, you idiot. Adam's way too nice. He didn't say that. I just heard it in my brain as I was realizing how dumb I was. But yeah, Heidi is in the group, and we play at Heidi's house. Heidi and I have been playing together for a while. In fact, when I would come up on business trips to Minneapolis, I would always try to carve out within the week like a night where we could go and play together. Yeah. So it was one of those where I already knew them, but we didn't have like a regular ongoing thing. And now it's just amazing. They're great. I'm so thankful.
Very cool. That's nice. When that happens, that's very nice.
It is. It is. I'm in a Padawans in the Vineyard game that I've been running.
Yes. I've seen, this is on the Gauntlet though, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So I still have to say, every time I see any version of Star Wars that you're running on the Gauntlet, I get jealous, right? Because I want to play and I want a Star Wars someday, right? So I have those two jealousy things going. I think that's awesome. I love it. So
it's interesting because I'm coming to find after, like, I'm going into third year of this now.
Right.
That by hacking so many different games to be part of the Star Wars anthology series that I've been running, that has teaching me a lot about game design that I wouldn't have from started from scratch or from just reading and playing a particular game. Like,
right.
I have to understand, like, what are the genres that are being emulated? What are the trigger points within the system? What's a way I have to either reshape the game so the Star Wars-y or tilt where the fiction hits so that this engine goes? And there have been times when it slips a little bit. Sometimes the gears will slip and it's not perfect, but there are other times where I'm like, Hug Cartel, like, that's
it. And
Padawans in the Vineyard is good, but what was funny is I had the inkling to run Dogs in the Vineyard, except that the dogs are Padawans or, you know, Jedi. Right. I've been wanting to do that for a while, but I was held back by the fact that the underpinning of the anthology series is that it was taking place during the original trilogy. You don't have a bunch of Padawans.
Right.
Yeah, like Anakin already killed them all.
Right, already killed them all.
But...
sorry, spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler. Trust me, don't go back. Just take our word for it. Don't go back and watch the prequels. You don't have to. Watch the Clone Wars series. But
Clone Wars is so good.
So good. But now I'm post the original trilogy, and I'm almost sitting in that space where Mandalorian is. And I'm like, Yeah, there could be a fledgling Jedi temple that this crazy Jedi master sent out a bunch of Padawans to try to find other people who are experiencing the Force so they don't get swept up by a Sith or, you know, swallowed whole. And it's pretty good. I will say that Dogs in the Vineyard is a real good game. It takes a different mindset.
Right. right?
It really does. Like, you get used to a Powered by the Apocalypse game where you're just firing moves, pop, 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 pop.
Right.
Dogs in the Vineyard is like, no, we're going into a conflict now. And this conflict may get escalated to some really nasty places, but like, it's all this thing. And it is really all, it's an all consuming, all encompassing conflict that is engrossing. But it takes a certain scene structure. It takes a certain mentality, how you approach things. And as a GM, I can see why there's the adage of like, say yes or roll the dice.
Right.
Because there are certain things where you're like, I don't know if I want to go into this level of conflict when, you know, a person is playing the Jedi. You got a laser sword by your side. Does this person want to give you guff, or do they just roll and give you info? And Dogs, of course, the setup for the Watchdogs and Dogs in the Vineyard is that you're in the area of the faith, so most of the people are going to just come up and hand you their problems. So you got to emulate that in Star Wars. And once you do that, it helps a lot. But I'm finding it really interesting. It was the first session, there were some spits and starts as people were like, well, how much authority do I have? And I've played Dogs in the Vineyard and I'm playing a Padawan and I've like traveled to this different planet. And I have the, so there's a lot of canon that we need to kind of shift around. Right. But once everybody kind of settled in, the second session, I had a whole nother town and we were just going to like wrap up the little bit of the last town. Didn't get to the other town.
I love when that happens. I'm like, yeah, I've got some things I got to tie up, and then we're going to go off and do this other thing. And the player's like, no, we got a lot of things we're still digging in.
Oh yeah. It's like, no, we need to deal with this, this baby Jedi here who, not baby, but like, you know, young child with force powers who's evidently maybe dark side influenced. We must deal with him and figure out, are we actually going to bring him back? And then there's this whole conversation of like, well, I mean, do we really bring him back to the Jedi? Do we think that our Jedi Master can help him? Or, well, what are we going to do? Just let him stay here? Because he's like, oh, it was so good. And I just sit back, like,
right?
Yep. Let me get my popcorn. It's good stuff. And
we're going to ride this one out.
And I'm playing in a Bounty of the Week game that someone else is running. They took my Star Wars thing and posted up to run it themselves.
Yes.
And I love it. And it's so much better than my version. It's so much better. So good. David MK has taken my little hack, and with his layout skills and his design skills, he just made a couple of new playbooks and tweaked up some of the rules. And like, I don't like Rich's decision here. I'm going to do it this way. And I'm like, yeah, you do. You do it that way. That's cool.
Nice.
It's neat. I really love. And if you want to get in on some Star Wars Saturday goodness and run a few slots, you are welcome, man. Run some Hutt Cartel. I've never gotten to play.
I think that's my hook is Hutt Cartel, because that just was so easy and smooth, and everybody's in, and it's easy to. It's a no-brainer. The characters you put together were beautiful, and they click together. They run together nicely. I ran it for we had a big con out at Kent Con that runs like 3 days, and I think I ran it twice out there, and it was nice. So I would certainly run that again.
It's funny, man. Like, it just is butter. Like, those two things really make an awesome Reese cup.
So my kid and I, we just started The Mandalorian. Playing it. We're using Edge of the Empire.
Nice.
So that's what we're using. And I looked at a bunch of different stuff, but we're coming off of, I think his first game we've ever played was Traveler. Mm-hmm. He reskinned it like Halo. Halo and 40K, right?
Oh my gosh, what a combo. That's amazing.
So he was, a Halo trooper, and we crash landed on a Necron world, right?
That's pretty awesome. I hear those words, and I think they combo quite nicely. Good choices there.
That's a good choice. And then we played D&D, BX D&D. So he's got those two systems under his belt. I think they're nuanced. They're not complicated, but they're nuanced. Mm-hmm. So now I want to show him something different. And so that's why I picked the Fantasy Flight Games, Edge of the Empire, because those dice are crunchy and weird, but nice. And branding, right? He saw that. And I felt like he's 12, right? And branding's a big part of where he's at right now. And I'm like, all right, we'll do this. And I got enough of this stuff. So he's going through the Bounty Hunter book. And we made some choices and stuff. And he decided he's working for the a remnant of the Empire because we're playing in that same time frame.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, okay. At first, I wasn't sure we were in the middle. I think we had just watched six or seven. No, we watched six of the Mandalorians. We had not seen the Moff land yet, right?
Okay.
So I'm like, I don't even know what to do with that, right? And then when we saw that Grand Moff land, I'm like, oh, I know where I'm going. I know what I got.
Oh, man.
We're going to play in Hutt space. And
ooh.
Yes. And he's got – so Edge of the Empire has that the obligation mechanic in it. So I think when you start as a group, your ship is part of your group's obligation. And it goes on a chart that's rollable, right? And then everyone else has their personal obligations, right? Like Han Solo had money that he owed to Hutt, right? A Jabba. That's an obligation he's got. And then every session, right, you roll in that chart and see whose obligation comes up, right? Sometimes nothing. And I think it's a D100, so everything can fill in percentage-wise. I think it's 5% is the granularity. Sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes somebody's obligation comes up and they make an appearance in that session. And so he's got some obligations in there that are interesting because he's got a ship and he wanted the starter Mandalorian armor. But I'm like, okay, we could do that, right? But I'm going to put it on as obligation. We're going to talk about it. You're going to have to answer some questions like, where'd he come from? Why do you have it? I guess because you didn't come from nowhere, right? So let's get into that. So he's excited. So.
We'll do
a podcast and we'll do that whole thing. So I'll
definitely be listening to that.
So other than that, it's been work for me, man. Crazy work stuff. So
yeah, I hate your crazy work stuff, man. It keeps you away from all the fun stuff.
I know. Most of the time it's nice and smooth and easy. Every now and again, there's a little bit of crazy fire, not even real fire, it's crazy fire. And I gotta go put it out. So I will be at – actually, I need to come up to Minneapolis and come to a con up there. So we have to talk about that.
Yeah.
Put me in the what's happening and where you're going to be at. I'll come up because you're not that far.
That's true. I mean, Con of the North is over the Valentine's Day weekend. I will try to see if there's anything else between Con of the North and Origins, and that's I will let you know.
Yeah, I will do that. I would come up, man.
You're a traveling man.
Yes. I feel bad because for the Midwest, other than my own Kansas City cons, I used to attend Forge Midwest a lot, but now it competes with New Mexico. They're back to back.
Well, that's right. I'm going to that this year. Because why not? Yeah. Sorry. I'm going to Forge Midwest. Yeah.
So Ralph Mazza and I, we have the same problem is that we'll go to New Mexico. And then the problem is the following weekend getting into Madison, Wisconsin. And me, I'd rather fly out and fly in, right? Stay where I'm at, not come back to Kansas City, and then fly into Madison. And I usually will fly in the Phoenix, Arizona, drive with Paul Beakley into New Mexico, and then drive back to Phoenix. And then I would want to fly right into Madison.
When is it? When is New Mexico this year?
I want to say April.
Yeah, and then it's going to be the same deal this year. It's April 24th through 26th on Forge Midwest.
So what I got to do is now, because Mazza and I have been talking, is we've got enough runway to plan it and make it nice, see if we can make that work nice. Because I'd like to go. I feel bad because that was I'd go to that one all the time every year. Jeremiah and I would drive up to Iowa. We'd grab some folks from Iowa and then drive into Madison. And that was fun because we'd go early and stay overnight and then pick up the rest of the trip from Iowa into Madison. And that was a fun time. And that's a fun con. I love it. I liked it. I've always had fun out there.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of folks out there. So that's good stuff. And I miss it. So.
Well, I hope you make it work because then I get more time to game with you.
Awesome. Maybe we can make somebody run Hutt Cartel for the both of us.
Oh, my gosh. We both sit at the table. Who's going to shoot who first? I don't know. That's the mystery.
So, I got my son a new laptop for Christmas.
Nice.
We just picked it up today. Kind of a late Christmas. That's how dad's money works. We ended up with our second choice. He only uses it for browser stuff, mm-hmm. and Steam. And I was hoping I could get by with like a sub-$500 machine, since he's only running Steam on it. We're not really putting big games on it. He will run. I mean, we have an Xbox, and that's where all our big games are.
Right, exactly.
And this is his first brand new laptop. He's always gotten hand-me-downs from me.
I bet those are pretty good hand-me-downs.
Well, yeah, I'm like, you know, I'm a software engineer, and I'm, you know, back then, almost every year and a half, I'm like, I can't use this anymore. Here you go. Right? And but it would still do other stuff most awesomely. And the last one he had, the last hand-me-down he got, he's probably used it for like 3 years. And I should have been paying attention. Steam is not running some of the games for him. And I think it's because they're graphically intensive. And so I think I'm wrong about what I perceive Steam to be anymore. The games I like run fine. But he's looking at, he's looking at some stuff that's intensive. And I'm like, so I think here's where we are, buddy. I'm probably not slapping down, you know, $1,000, $1,500 on a gaming laptop, right? Because we got an Xbox, right?
Yeah.
And you're spoiled because we got two Xboxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I will go on one, he'll play on the other, and we'll jump in and play like Titanfall or things like that. And that's where most of the gaming takes place. Grandma and Grandpa got him a Switch, right? So he has that.
Nice.
Right. So I'm like, we're probably not getting a big third gaming platform, right?
So that's been the argument for me. I'm like, buddy, you got a Switch and Xbox One X.
Yes, yeah.
Like, if you want an intensive game, then get it for the Xbox.
Right, right.
There are some games that only exist on a gaming PC, but you could just give them a miss. You don't have to have all the games.
Right, you don't have to have all the
games. I don't have to have Showtime. You don't have to have a gaming laptop.
I like that. I don't have to have Showtime. Right, you don't have to have a gaming laptop. Right. So, and Mom and I talked through this. So, I want to make sure we're all on the same page before I'm like, because here's where I'm at. I'm like, I don't game on PCs because I work on them, and I just I don't want to. Right? It's not fun anymore. Right? And so I'm like, when I want a game, I just want to pop a thing in and play the game.
Yeah, I've got a Steam library that's just stupid full of stuff that I never play, but I'll play some Xbox. You know,
yeah.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Yeah.
I
just fell into the swindle on the Xbox. It's a platformer. It's a heist game.
Oh, write it down.
Don't do it, man, because you'll be mad at me. You'll be frustrated. You'll be pissed off. So you're playing in this steampunk clockwork Victorian era, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're about to bring on some crime control unit stuff that's going to just kill it all for you. Your job is you have 100 days. To amass the resources you need to put this thing out of commission so it doesn't come online. 100 days. That's all you got, right? So you start by running heists, right? You drop out of your little airship. You got a dude, right? It's kind of roguelike in that if that dude dies, right, there's some other burglar that comes along, right, and picks up the mission, but you don't get any new time. You've lost time, right? You're constantly always losing time. You can use the money that you grab, right, from completing heists to buy gear, buy up skills, all kinds of things. You got to buy security, right, to get into the higher security areas to get more money, right, so you can complete your mission, right? One of the things is you've got to buy high enough clearance so you can get to the big heist before 100 days. So at the beginning, and it's not a spoiler, I'm warning you, it's kind of, here's where the mine is, right? Here's where they get you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're running through this platformer and you're grabbing up these dollar icons. That's money, that's cash, right? And maybe you run through your first two or three heists and that's all great. That's awesome. You're like, man, I'm doing this. This is easy, right? You're avoiding detection. You get a bonus if they don't ever see you, but you can knock out cops and knock out, automations and things like that. But every heist that you go on, every location, has a big payoff room. Once you discover that those things exist, then you start pushing it because that's where the money is. Right. Then you start pushing it and then it got you and then it's bad. I lost like 10 dudes in one location. Just I'm like, I'm not done. I'm getting in there. Right. Yeah. And then just losing time. I see my time just counting down. Lost the day, lost the day, lost the day. I hate this game. I can't stop playing it.
What an like, interesting thing. That's like, fascinating.
We'll finish this recording. We'll go grab hamburgers. And then I'm going to go play some Swindle, right?
Nice.
I'll lose four or five guys, and I'm like, oh, I'm done. I'm done.
Yes, it's because it hooks in you.
Yeah, it does. But I like it, so... Yeah, so that's it. But that's on the Xbox, and that's what I've been playing it on. So, my birthday's this week, man. I will be, yes, the 21st. It's my birthday.
Oh, so. Your birthday's the day before my dad's. That's awesome. It's a good week.
Yes, it is a good week. And my mom's is, oh, my goodness. I might have to call my mom. It's today. Call my mom.
You better call your mom after this.
Well, so, yeah, she's in Florida, and I know they just got out of church, and they do, yeah, they're big in, a couple of years ago, we were out there for Christmas and church was like 3 hours.
Ooh.
So yeah.
Sunday night?
No, it was Sunday morning, but okay. I think they were nice cause we were in town. They will spend a whole day in church.
So, yeah.
But they also do a lot of hands-on stuff, in the community with the church too. So, but yeah, I'm like, man, I don't know that I could do all day church.
Church gets a bad rap in our circles, but it does a lot of good. It does a whole lot of good.
Yeah, that it was growing up. It was tightly tied to the community I was in when I was growing up, and that's how I remember it. Is that outside of the teachings, they did a lot of groundwork in the community across the board, and I miss that. In churches today, it's, at least in Kansas City, it's not. We got super giant mega churches. People drive 20 miles to get to churches. And I'm not bashing that, but I've lived next to one. And other than Sunday, I don't know that they're there or that they're doing
anything. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So I got to share this with you since we stumbled into this conversation. I was talking to my dad today. And he informs me that the church that I was baptized in, the church that I was married in back in East Tennessee, he's still heavily involved in the church. He said, so today was interesting, son. I said, what's that, bud? Mm-hmm. What's that, dad? He said, well, I volunteered to be on the security team for the church. I'm like, what do you mean? Because, and then just like if you heard about, you know, in Texas.
Yeah.
They have usually military vets who volunteer to lock the doors while the service is going on and stand outside and stand guard. And Dad said, I'm going to be bringing my pistol. It was a weird experience. I should have brought my pistol. I just didn't know how I felt about it. But, I mean, I've got a concealed carry permit, so I'm just going to do that thing. And I'm like, wow.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot, right? Mm-hmm. That's where we are, right?
Yeah, it's where we are. It's exactly where we are.
And it's sad that we're here.
It is.
That hurts a little bit on the inside to know that churches are also having to do the same thing.
It hurts.
To protect themselves. So that's awesome that your dad stepped up and is part of that.
So. That's what I'd expect. That's my dad.
So, all right, man, I'm going to get some food. I appreciate you doing this. This was awesome.
It was great getting on and chatting with you. Jay, I can't wait till next Spire.
Yes, I got some surprises.
No.
So I think so. And I'll write about this. I think the thing for me in Spire is I got to make sure that I don't drive you guys. You guys have to pick where you want to go. You're driving, right? So how do I make it fun for me? Where's my fun at, right? And so for me, I'm like, well, there's all kinds of lore and fictional pieces just in the core book. I don't have to go anywhere else. It's a bunch of stuff in the core book. So I've been trying to pull something that's fascinating to me out of the core book every session and put it on the table and put it in front of you. Whether you engage with it or not, it's part of, like, the Knolls, right? You went and visited the Gentleman's Club, and there were Knolls inside.
That's
like,
cool.
Like, right? And I'm like, well, yeah, right? Because that's the thing I pulled out of the book. I'm like, oh, that's, I had no idea. That's awesome. I'm going to put that in there. We're going to play with that. And so that's what I'm doing. And I found something cool that I like. And I don't think it changes anything, but I think it adds to it.
Nice. Spices.
So I'm gonna, yes, I'm going to add some hot sauce in the next session. So awesome, man. I will let you get back to your Sunday night.
Sounds good.
Thanks for doing this.
Enjoy your burger and games.
Yes. I will talk to you later.
See you, man.
That's my show. Thanks for listening. Join my Patreon and get access to extended interviews and bonus episodes. Send your comments to me at madj@dysology.com or on Twitter @GoDysology. Let's make this our regular thing.